Into another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. I am your co-host Corey Kinnon alongside James Foster once again here. It's been a little bit since we've done a Daft or Draft, so it's time to do another Daft or Draft here. James and I will be throwing out some hot takes here. We're gonna see whether or not we're buying or selling these hot takes now that we've hit about the midway point in the season here. James, how are you feeling coming into another week of college football here?
I am pumped for this weekend, heading up to Bloomington. Driving up there tomorrow for Michigan State. Actually, the only other IU football game that I've ever been to was against Michigan State back when I was like six, and we somehow beat them, and it was like a miracle. But this time it won't be as big of a shock if they come out with the win.
Yeah, for sure. I was supposed to go to Nashville this weekend. That's off the table now, unfortunately. I was going to do a 15K Tough Mudder, but some stuff went down with them. I was supposed to do it with, and I'm like,
you gotta let me know when you're in Nashville.
I sure will. But I was like, I'm not doing a 15K race by myself now that my buddy can't do it anymore. So it would be brutal. So I'll be chilling, watching some football this weekend. So I'm excited about that. But yeah, let's just dive into these hot takes, man. So first one here, James. Daft or draft, Ohio State will have four defensive players drafted in the top 50.
So it really comes down to how you feel about Jermaine Matthews Jr. and Caden McDonald, because I think the three locks would be Arvel Reese, Sonny Styles, and Caleb Downs. And so my bet would be that one of those other two go in the top 50. I'm not sure that I see both of them. You know, I wonder how Jermaine Matthews Jr. is going to test, and then Caden McDonald I don't think has the pass rushing value. So I'm going to say that it's the over-under should be 4.5. I'm going to say under 4.5.
Under 4.5. Under 4.5 is for sure good. What if we set it at 3.5, though?
If it's 3.5, I would say over, because Jermaine Matthews Jr., I think, is, you know, when I watch Ohio State defense every week, like he's one of the two or three most impactful players on the field pretty much every time. And, you know, it's a tape that everyone involved with an NFL franchise is going to be watching. Like every linebacker coach is going to be watching Ohio State's defense. Every DB coach is going to be watching Ohio State's defense. They're going to be like, who's this Jermaine Matthews Jr. kid? And, you know, I just think that's how guys kind of gradually rise up boards throughout the process. So I would go over 3.5.
Yeah, I think I would go over 3.5 too. Again, we talk a lot about, like, this is just not a very deep class either. Like players, it's like 50 players have to go into the top 50. Like teams can't skip picks. So even if guys don't like get top 50 grades, it happens every year, man. So like, would it even shock you if like a team desperate for an edge rusher took Kenyatta Jackson at 49th overall?
That would shock me.
Yeah.
I think that to me, he's really, really talented. And I just think the feedback he's going to get, he should come back to school. And cause he is an underclassman, correct? Yeah.
Redshirt junior.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think he's all the way there yet. Like his bull rush just stalls out way too often. And he's explosive and long enough to where he should be able to generate a pretty good speed to power. So I would like him to come back another year and kind of take a next step. If he declared, I think a team would probably take him top 75 off of traits, but I don't know about top 50.
I mean, he'd be an Indianapolis freak for sure. I'm going to take over 3.5. I'm going to say 4 as well. I know we don't even love Davis and Igbinosin that much, but I could see an NFL team. I mean, Joey Porter Jr. went 33rd overall. I feel like they're pretty similar prospects stylistically. For all things Davis and Igbinosin as well, he's taking a step forward this year.
He has
as well,
sure.
Based off of his tape last year. So
he's just he's like such a specialized player in terms of what he's either elite at something or just cannot do it. Like, he cannot play the ball in the air. He cannot play off coverage. But just like, if you need somebody to erase routes and press men, like, he can do that all day for you.
Yeah. Yep. I feel that for sure. I would probably bank on Jermaine Matthews being that top 50 guy as well. I do like Caden McDonald, man, but I'm kind of there with you as well. Like, a very stout run defender. Pass rush production is there, but like, that's a very process versus results conversation, right? The process, it doesn't look.
I keep going into games and be like, oh, Caden McDonald had some pass rushing production, and it was like, you know, a stunt, and then one nice bull rush or something. Even if there is some juice as a pass rusher, I don't think it's going to be high volume at all.
Yeah, definitely agree. I would put him in the same tier as like Dominique Orange. I feel the same way about Dominique Orange.
Yeah. Yeah. I probably feel a little bit more optimistic about Dominique Orange, but again, not as a high volume pass rusher.
Yeah. All right. Next after draft here. The first two group of five players drafted will be Toledo safety Emmanuel McNeil Warren and San Diego State corner Chris Johnson.
So I'm going to draft this, and I partially brought this one up just because as more of like a question is like, who are the other G5 players that are really playing on these guys' level right now? Because I think both of them are having outstanding seasons. The production is there that you need for them, you know, coming from a lower level of competition. And relatively, you know, all the other G5 standouts have transferred to Power 4 teams, mm-hmm. and are performing well for them this year, it seems to me at least.
Yeah, I mean, coming into the season, it was John Michael Gillenborg for me would have been my highest graded G5 player, and the production just isn't there I mean, at all.
He's been injured because I keep looking for him and he hasn't. I keep looking to see if he played and he hasn't. So
yep, he's been hurt. Cage Casey, left tackle, Boise State.
I need to watch him.
But he's definitely a guard. But I think Cage Casey could be drafted before Chris Johnson. But Chris Johnson's playing really well. Like, he's playing really good football. I definitely think Emmanuel McNeil Warren carries the title as the best G5 player in the draft class, though.
I would agree with that.
I think that mantle is, and I think there's a gap.
Yeah, I think so. I wonder how fast Emmanuel McNeil Warren is. That would be my concern. Mm-hmm. But as kind of like a box / you know, overhang defender, I really like him. And he is one of the most skilled players I've seen at forcing fumbles. Like, he has so many forced fumbles and none of them are fluky. It's all like precision raking the ball out.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm still thinking, trying to think of other ones, but you're right in that the NIL transfer portal era, if those guys are good, they're playing P4 football right now. Yeah, I don't think there's even another person to throw in that conversation that I can think of off the top of my head. So I'm going to draft... Oh, jeez. Cage Casey's really... Because, again, the NFL's at a premium for offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. Oh, that throws a wrench into this.
And, I mean, the last two drafts, we've seen the offensive linemen run in like the third round. Teams have to really dip into the day three grades. And like basically anybody that you had an early day three grade on, and like, you're like, yeah, he'll probably be a fifth round pick. They go in the late third round. So I could definitely see Cage Casey, you know, I haven't watched him, but the way you're describing him, he sounds like he could be one of those guys that maybe has a fourth round grade or something, but there's just a huge run and he goes off the board. Whereas like a DBs fall all the time.
Yeah. I'm even trying to think of a player to comp him to, and I can't even think of a good player comp off the top of my head. Like, I think Joel Batonio out of Nevada, who played left tackle at Nevada and played guard at the NFL level, I think that's too steep of a... I think maybe that's his high-end comp, but like, I don't have a good comp for him off the top of my head either. But so I'll draft it. Just because offensive linemen tend to get a little boost. All right. The next one here. After draft, James, there will be no all-pro tight ends or quarterbacks from this 2026 draft class.
I'm going to daft this. And it's not because I feel very strongly about any of these tight ends or quarterbacks being all pros. It's more just playing the numbers. But I do think it'll be like right around one or two. It's kind of just like, you know, Kenyon Sadiq and then maybe one of the quarterbacks. But yeah, I will daft this, but I think it might be close. I think it might look like there will be none until, you know, year five or something.
Yeah. Mm-mm-mm.
Because, I mean, an all-pro quarterback.
I know.
That's not saying somebody's going to be good.
Right. You'd have to go back to 2017, 2016 to find a quarterback that didn't have just like absolutely outrageous tools to be named the first team all pro quarterback. 2017 was Tom Brady. Again, Tom Brady had a howitzer. Like people would discredit his arm strength a ton. And Matt Ryan in 2016. That was the Matt Ryan MVP year. So you're hoping that Ty Simpson or Fernando Mendoza or Dante Moore, if Dante Moore picks it back up, rebounds, and comes out in this class, are Matt Ryan, right? Like that's because we've talked about Lamar, Pat Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Lamar, Pat Mahomes the last 7 years.
So all maybe guys. Playing the numbers would be drafting this because I almost feel like quarterback is kind of a red herring. It's like that's not even, I feel like that's just not going to happen. So then it comes down to tight end. And do you see an all-pro tight end in this class? Kenyon Sadiq,
tight end, I could go either way based on situation. I mean, looking at the past first-team all-pro tight ends here, like going all the way back to...
It's going to be more wide open with Kelsey and Kittle not in the league.
Exactly. Both those guys were day-two picks as well. Gronkowski was a day-two pick. Mark Andrews was a day-two pick. Like... Brock Bowers is the only first-team All-Pro tight end to be drafted in the first round since like a very long time. Because since 2013, it's Jimmy Graham, converted basketball player, Gronkowski, Kittle, Kelsey, Andrews, Kelsey, Kittle, Bowers.
Yeah.
So I think tight end is very scheme-specific. It's a lot more nuanced than quarterback about how guys can produce. But
and a lot of our pessimism about the tight end class is that none of them block, and while that might keep them off the field, it's not going to directly prevent them from making the all-pro because they don't care about that.
No, and Sadiq can block.
Right.
Like Sadiq feels...
I mean more like the Max Clair, Eli Stowers, like they're looking at the depth of the class.
Oh, yeah. I don't feel good about any of those guys. Like
Clair had a nice play... He's picked it up a little bit.
I wonder if he goes back, though, just because the production has been so not what he expected. Sadiq would be the only one that I think could be. And I think he fits like the mold of the skill set of George Kittle more than Kelsey Andrews, obviously. I'll daft it, though. Saying all pros, pretty steep. That's a steep thing to say, so I'll daft it for sure. All right, this next one's an interesting conversation because these two players get linked at the hip for some reason. One, because of their physical tools and how raw of a passer people think that one is and how raw of a passer one was coming into the NFL. But after draft, James here, Lenore Sellers already projects as a cleaner NFL draft prospect than Anthony Richardson did in 2023.
So I'm going to say draft this, and I would have drafted this over the summer. Because I think over the summer it was an accurate comparison because to me, Lenore Sellers' short to intermediate accuracy was dreadful last season and his deep ball is pretty good. This year I think that has balanced out a lot more and he is has a higher floor than Anthony Richardson did, I think. So I would definitely draft this. He sees the field better. Mm-hmm. I thought Anthony Richardson, the one thing that was kind of ahead of the curve from a quarterbacking perspective was his pocket movement and feel, mm-hmm. which I would prefer that aspect of Anthony Richardson's game to Sellers. But I think as far as a processor and a passer, Sellers is further ahead than Richardson.
Yeah, I would draft this as well. Again, there are things that are in Richardson's favor. So you mentioned the pocket movement skills, navigating murky waters in the pocket. Again, my biggest gripe with Sellers is that he turns 3-yard sacks into 12-yard sacks. Like, again, just sometimes, man, call a loss, mm-hmm. hit the next down. Richardson is a better athlete. I mean, Richardson's legitimately a one-of-one athlete.
I think in college, Richardson was.
His body broke down. I think his body's broken down quite a bit already, which I guess, let me see, it went real fast. Does that give you pause about Sellers at all? How fast Cam Newton broke down, how fast Anthony Richardson's breaking down?
Yeah, probably a little bit. I mean, ultimately, you know, the out of structure stuff, it's just, I don't prioritize quarterbacks where that is the main selling point. That's something where, like, once you reach the Matt Ryan level, it's like, okay, now can you create on those three or four high leverage third downs, can you like scramble, make something happen outside the pocket? That's how you break into that top tier. That's, to me, that's what out of structure playmaking is for quarterbacks. It separates the good to great from the elite.
Precisely. We got so wrapped up in like the 2019, really after Alan Mahomes, I think, sparked it. But from like 2019 to 2022, we got so wrapped up in, can these dudes create outside of structure? And it's like, that's how you end up loving guys like Malik Willis, who couldn't do anything but throw a backside nine in structure. And that's how you end up loving guys like Zach Wilson, who couldn't read out Hank, for God's sake. Like, that's how you end up with some of these guys getting drafted high.
And I think,
I'm glad we're back.
But I think the tough thing with quarterbacks, like one other element that makes evaluating quarterbacks so much difficult compared to other positions, is the number of players, the sample size of players that we get to like cross check that actually play in the NFL. There's only 32 every year. Think about all the DBs and receivers that go through the draft process, put out tape in the NFL. We get to see what works, what doesn't. That, and it's still really hard to do it with those positions. Mm-hmm. With quarterbacks, there's like a couple new ones every year that play, and they can have, you know, these career outcomes that like have us chasing ghosts. Like, you know, a couple good out of structure quarterbacks can come into the league and then make everybody think that like that's the number one thing that you have to prioritize, and then it can really throw off the analysis. So mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're definitely on the same page there. Rounding out this Dapter draft, though, I still feel better about Sellers. One, he's started more college games already. That, again, the incremental progress is there. I'm going to draft this. I feel better about Sellers as a prospect than Anthony Richardson, but it does concern me how much thought and pause I had to give this question.
Yeah, I feel similarly about Sellers as I did to Drew Aller last year, who I liked more than you, where it's like, I thought he was very raw year one. Year two was a noticeable step forward, but still not quite to the level where he's capable of, and they need to go back to school and try to have a great last year and really stamp themselves as first round picks. You know, with Sellers, we don't know what the outcome is going to be. With Aller, obviously, it went about as badly as possible.
As bad. But yeah. All that to say, like, I think that Sellers should probably go back to school, but I mean, if he's got top five guarantees, you're not passing that money down. I feel good about it. Better than Richardson. Yeah. All right, next one here. This is just a college football. Actually, let's flop this and do that one last. This next one here about another blue blood program. We started out with Ohio State talking blue blood football on a positive end with four guys going top 50 potentially. We're going to talk about another blue blood program on maybe the negative end here. After draft, James, Alabama has zero top 50 defenders drafted in the 2026 NFL draft class.
This is basically a LT Overton question.
Yes.
Essentially. It's where do you think LT Overton's going to go? So I can start with the non-LT Overton players. Deontay Lawson, I liked him heading into the year. He's out of my top 100. Tim Keenan, I think he's a solid run-stopping nose tackle, but
he's got like 29-inch arms too.
he's 109 for me. Well, 30 and a half inches, 0.2 percentile. You got Damani Jackson, who we've talked about, Bray Hubbard, Keon Sabb, not top 50 picks to me. LT Overton, man.
This is the thing where, again, 50 players have to go top 50.
Right. Like, I have him 40, and it's like when you say, is LT Overton a top 50 pick? I'm like, no. But I guarantee you, like you said, 50 players are going to go in the top 50 this year. So, yeah, I will daft it, but I don't think it's ridiculous.
I'll daft it too. But here's the thing that I really think might happen as well. One, the tape just isn't very good for LT Overton this year.
No. I charted all of his pressures that he's had so far, and he doesn't win unless he's like gradually pushing the pocket or he's lined up over a guard. So yeah, not a guy that's going to threaten the outside track.
The production's moderate, 5 tackles for loss, 3 sacks. It's not terrible. It's better than last year already. He's already topped his production from last year. So that matters to an extent, but here's what I really think might happen because I see it on tape and I don't think he's a very explosive athlete. He could be one of those guys that goes to Indianapolis and bottoms out as an athlete.
Yeah.
And at that point, I mean, he's already a tweener that I don't know what to do with. If he tests as moderate, I guess is the way I would phrase it, as modest as I think he's going to, that would also give me even more pause.
So tracking data for LT Overton compared to edge rushers, top speed, 56th percentile, average get off yards, 2.7, 44th percentile, but elite get off percentage. So what percentage of plays were you 90th percentile or better get off, like really firing off the ball? That's 7.3 percentile. So that means he doesn't have like the top end capability, you know?
Yeah.
So I could kind of see that. And like, I think just visually on tape, I agree with your assessment of him athletically.
So I think I'm going to draft it, man. I think I'm going to draft it. I mean, are we even sure that
I'm talking myself out of him even being 40th. Like, I might need to lower his grade a little bit.
Like, are we even sure that a guy like Bray Hubbard even declares? He's a true junior.
Probably not.
There's not, yeah, this defense is pretty barren of NFL talent. Like top tier NFL talent.
They have that freshman defensive tackle. I forget his name. He's really good. They've got some underclassmen.
London Simmons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to draft this dude. I don't think there's going to be an Alabama defensive player in the top 50. I do think we could have one.
What if Caden Proctor moves to nose tackle?
Sure. I'll give you that one. Okay. Top 50 offensive, though, I think we could see 1, 2, 3, 4 guys, 5 maybe.
Jeremy Bernard,
Isaiah Ty Horton, Simpson. Caden Proctor, Ty Simpson, Parker Brailsford.
Dude, Parker Brailsford is
a really good player. Really well.
He's just tiny. Yeah.
His core strength is really good.
Yeah. You know who I, speaking of core strength, hands, grip strength, Chase Besantis.
Yes.
I watched him last night.
Yes.
That Notre Dame game was incredible, but I watched all his tape. He has balance issues is my big problem.
In the run game, I think so. Right. Pass pro, I think it's...
Yeah,
it's,
he's right.
Pretty okay.
He's got a good like base in pass pro. He mm-hmm. falls down constantly in the run game.
In the run game. He's way out of his skis in the run game. But his pass pro stuff is so good, dude. I'm glad you brought him up right there, even though it's completely off topic.
Though, speaking of guards, for Bama, and like I don't think he's a top 50 pick because the play is so inconsistent and he's like never on the field, but the flashes from Jaden Roberts are like first round guard tape. If you just like, he destroys people in the run game in the way that very few guards are capable of. He is a freak athlete, but he finally played last week and had a couple crazy knockdowns, but he was in and out of that game. And something I've noticed watching Bama tape for the past 3 years is when I'm watching their offensive line, Jaden Roberts is constantly in, like he's constantly missing 20 snaps a game. And I'm like, notice that they had to reshuffle their offensive line because he's in and out of there. So I think he will probably have some medical concerns, but phenomenal upside if he puts it all together.
Yeah, I like it. All right, final daft or draft here. And this one's a college football specific one. So last year, Indiana was obviously really highly ranked. They went on that massive run to start the season, played Ohio State, got kind of beat up, played Notre Dame, got kind of beat up to the point where it's like, okay, are these guys actually legitimate contenders, or did they just beat up on a pretty bad schedule, and then any top game they got kind of trounced? They just beat Oregon, but that was honestly Oregon's real first test of the season, is I guess Penn State, but was Penn State even actually a test? Do we know that for sure? So the drafter, James, Indiana is a legitimate contender to win a national title in 2025.
So I agree with kind of the premise of last year compared to this year. First of all, I think obviously if we just compare the roster, they're better at quarterback. From Rourke to Mendoza. Offensive line, I do think is a little bit worse because the right side has has downgraded. They're more dynamic at receiver because, another year for Elijah Surratt, Omar Cooper breaking out. I think running back is kind of probably better earlier in the season for sure.
With Lee BB before he went down. Yeah.
The biggest downgrade is losing CJ West, although they did get Tyreek Tucker, who's been outstanding, and then Mario Landino is an underclassman who's a really good pass rusher. Mikhail Kamara on the edge is pretty solid, and then a great linebacker room. I think that Indiana is a legitimate title contender. They probably wouldn't be in my top two or three most likely teams. Like I would pick Ohio State over them. But yeah,
I think Indiana Miami would be a really good game.
Right. I would pick Miami.
I guess that's
over
two
Indiana.
Versus three. So maybe.
But I would probably put Indiana. I might go just with the rankings and say that Indiana has the third best team. I worry about
Texas
A&M
is really freaking good though, man.
Yeah. See, the thing is I thought Oregon was going to kind of beat them convincingly.
I did too.
So,
like, I went into last week's episode saying we have to level set expectations for Fernando Mendoza because, like, he's not facing the same kind of pressure that Dante Moore is, and he went out and outplayed Dante Moore, and they won anyway. So, like, yeah, I'm right there with you.
It's like, on paper, you say Texas A&M, it's like, yeah, on paper, Texas A&M is a more talented team than Indiana. And on paper, Oregon is too, but Indiana, it wasn't just like they had some fluky, snuck out of there with a win. It was, I think, two evenly matched teams for the most part. I do think that Indiana has parts of their roster that can be exploited that maybe Oregon didn't attack, you know, quite the way they could. Like I've said, the right side of the offensive line, cornerback opposite of D'Angelo Pons. And then safeties, I've mentioned on this podcast, busting coverages. There are parts of the roster that I think you can attack and could be something that hangs them up in the playoffs. But I think they are definitely a contender. And if we're framing this question as relative to last year, I definitely agree with the sentiment.
Yeah. So the one thing that blew me away about Indiana that I didn't expect in this Oregon game is how physically imposing they were defensively. Like I did not expect that. Like, and I think that's a lot of credit to the second level of the Indiana defense. Aiden Fisher, the Lowe's linebackers they're hard hitters. They're tone setters. And at the end of the day, football is still a physical sport, no matter how many stars are next to your name, things like that too. Like, you got to be willing to hit the guy across from you. And I think Indiana like really came out and punched Oregon in the mouth. And I don't know if they anticipated that was going to be the case, and it might have shelled them a little bit.
I think if we're comparing it to it, sticking on the Oregon game, if we compare Indiana and Oregon only on, you know, last Saturday, I think linebacker was the worst part of Oregon's roster, and yeah, and linebacker was the best part of Indiana's roster, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, even like if I'm looking at the top 25 and I say I think there's five teams that are better than Indiana, that's still a legitimate contender to win an NCAA title. Mm-hmm. Like, they are 100% deserving of where they are. So yeah, I'm gonna draft this and say they are legitimate to go after this thing, man. I think they could be fairly even keeled with Miami. Miami's got a lot of speed, but I think, you know, they could be pretty even keeled there. A&M is one of those teams like, man, A&M might be a real, not even a sleeper, a dark horse because they're number four in the nation. But that's a team that's got a gold star next to their name for me when I'm reading through this. But yeah.
A&M. So like I said, I caught up on A&M offensive line yesterday, and Besantis is really the only one I like from an NFL draft perspective. But I mean, they've got maulers. Like Armaj Reed-Adams the play is kind of erratic, but he will plant somebody into the ground about every drive. So I love the O-line, love the receivers. Marcel Reed is, I don't know. I mean, he seems to throw it well when he's targeting Mario Craver. Whenever he's throwing it to Casey Concepcion, like there's an 80-yard touchdown that he overthrows every single game. So, but yeah, I probably would heart of hearts take Texas A&M on a neutral field.
Yeah.
So I would say Indiana's probably fourth or fifth, but they are they do have a legitimate shot.
Yeah. Love it. That's exactly where I'm sitting at with this as well. So, all right, man, we knocked out six Dafter drafts here. Do you got anything else for the people?
That's all I got.
All right, we will be back tomorrow breaking down the week 8 slate in all of the NFL draft implications there and some emerging players to keep an eye on. But until next time, this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. See ya.